Hello and welcome to our second episode of the Marie Keating Foundation Talks Cancer podcast. Here we are again, talking lung cancer. I hope you're all keeping well and rest assured we have a brilliant episode in store for you. Today we'll be delving a little deeper into how lung cancer is diagnosed, the steps you'll take if your GP refers you on for further tests, and what your GP wants you to know about lung cancer. Today we're joined by General Practitioner Dr. Paul Carroll from Churchtown Medical Centre. We know that lung cancer in Ireland, and I'll have talked about this with Bernie in a previous episode, is on the increase, but it is still one of those cancers, I guess, that has very low survival rates at about 20% in 5 years. So it's very important, I think, for us to talk to you as a GP and see what your experience is. And I guess my first question to you would be, do you see many patients that come through that with, I suppose, respiratory conditions, but also maybe with a possibly underlying lung cancer?
Well, thanks very much, Helen, for the invitation. It's lovely to be here. And this is a really important topic, and I'm delighted to be here to talk to you about it today. Obviously, respiratory presentations to general practice are one of the major things that we see, particularly this time of year heading into the winter, and particularly with COVID and people worrying about things. So it's a great opportunity to see people, particularly who may have an ongoing respiratory problem. And we often see people who have an infection that's happening now, but then when you kind of dig a bit deeper, there's often underlying issues. And particularly, obviously, the thing we see the most of is people with cough, and people who've had a cough. And a lot of people come into us and say, oh, this isn't COVID because I've had this cough for ages, as if that's a good thing. And then we have to say, okay, well, why have you had this cough for ages? And let's look into that a little bit more. So often the conversation goes in a different direction to what you might think it would in the beginning.
And do you think people or patients, people actually, because they're not patients yet, but are aware that, you know, a cough, you know, some people may be smokers, let's face it, and some people aren't. But those who may have a smoker's cough, do you think they're able to identify a different kind of cough, you know, over that we talk about the 3 week cough that has changed? Do you think they're able to identify that and kind of present to you with it?
Are they able to identify it? They probably are able to identify it. Do they present to me with it? Not as often. You know, I think a lot of people minimize symptoms, play them down. I should be grand. I'll just leave it. Particularly men are terrible at this sort of thing, hoping that it'll go away by itself. And it's only when you often are seeing them about something different, and you may notice that previously you'd talked about a cough and said, oh, have you still got that cough? Ah, yeah, I have, but it's nothing. So sometimes you have to bring the conversation around to the cough, which is kind of the commonest sort of respiratory presentation. But sometimes people will bring it up and say, you know, either I've had this cough, or my husband or wife keeps hassling me about this cough. Mm-hmm. Maybe I should do something about it. So it's often other people will prompt them to come and have it talked about. But it all gets mixed up at the moment with COVID and all the respiratory infections that are around. So sometimes you have to actually be aware that this is actually not an infection that's happening right now. As you say, the 3 week kind of thing. And often people say, oh, it's not COVID because I've had this for a long time. So sometimes that's a prompt to look into it a little bit more.
Yeah, for sure. And what are the symptoms would people present to you with, Paul?
Well, the commonest thing, if we're talking about lung cancer, so the problem is, of course, nobody comes into me and says, I have lung cancer. So we have to work backwards. So when you eventually find out that someone might have lung cancer, then when you work back to, well, okay, what were the symptoms they had at the beginning? The commonest things are a cough that's either prolonged or different to what it was previously. Now, obviously, not everyone who has a cough has lung cancer, but the fact of somebody having a cough for an extended period of time without an obvious other cause for it, one of the things that we would think about would be lung cancer, which is uncommon in that group, but can occur. And then we'd be more suspicious, perhaps, if someone, when they were coughing at various times, were coughing up blood. That is more of a concern. If their cough has changed lately, If they have any pain in the chest or difficulty with their breathing, that's new. And then other things outside the lungs, like if they've lost weight without any good reason, or if they have pain in their bones that doesn't have another obvious explanation. They're the kinds of things mm-hmm. that we would see when we work backwards.
Yeah. And would you, like you mentioned men there, would you say you'd see more men than women presenting with these kind of symptoms in your clinic?
It's a difficult one because we don't see as many men as we do women in general, which mm-hmm. is a failing of the way our system works. So women, this is a gross generalization, but women in general are much more proactive about following up on a symptom. Men are much worse at that sort of thing and will try and push it out, kick it down the road. So, and it's often somebody else will prompt them to come in, or they'll come in the guise of a kind of a general medical assessment kind of thing. So I think in general we would see more men, but we certainly see lots and lots of women as well. So it's probably, I mean, I in our own practice, it's probably reasonably even split in what we would see.
Okay. So when a person comes to you, actually, Paul, with the symptoms that you've just described there, what would be the next step for you if you were, if you were suspecting a possible lung cancer?
So the first thing we would do usually would be to get an X-ray done of somebody's chest, which is a really good, simple tool. Most people in this situation have had hundreds of chest X-rays over the years, and it's a really good way of seeing inside the lungs to see what's going on. Generally speaking, if your chest X-ray is completely normal, then that rules out a lot of nasty things. Likewise, if a chest X-ray is abnormal, that doesn't necessarily mean you have cancer. It could be lots of other things. But mm-hmm. we can see a lot with a chest X-ray, which is a simple test, very widely available, and can usually be done pretty quickly. So that's generally the first step. And then depending on the result of the X-ray, we would either reassure them, look at other tests, or if they thought there was anything suspicious, either in their symptoms or in their X-ray or in their examination, we would refer them usually into, there's a fantastic service that the HSE has across the country, which is a rapid access lung cancer screening service. And we're able to refer directly from our practice electronically into the nearest regional centre that is near to the patient. And the general advice from the rapid access system is that the patients will be seen in the clinic, in the hospital, within 2 weeks, which is a fantastic service. And it really is one of the most efficient and prompt and comprehensive services that the HSE provides to our patients anyway, is the rapid access service, which mm-hmm. is across lung and breast and prostate cancers. So yeah. That's generally the way things work, is an assessment by us, generally a chest X-ray, and then managed from there on, possibly into the rapid access clinic in the hospital.
Yeah, so I think the time frame for that through the National Cancer Control Program is about 2 weeks, isn't it? Would a patient come back, would a person come back to you if they weren't seen or weren't hearing from the rapid access clinic?
We would tell them to. So, because the most important thing is to make sure that people don't fall in between the stools. So if we think that there's something that needs to be followed up, then we send a referral. Now, nowadays it's much more efficient because it's done electronically and there's a record of it. Once upon a time, we had to stick a letter in the post and you had no idea whether it was actually going to get there or not. Mm-hmm. So we've a good idea that it's going to get where it's going. And again, the technology is very good in that sense. But, you know, it's a fallible system. So we always say to people, if you haven't heard from the hospital within 2 weeks, please come back to us and we can explore it further. But that is hardly ever the case.
Good. That's good to know. It's good to know that the system works very well.
It works really well. It's, you know, a lot of people say to me, oh, you know, I prefer to go privately to see someone. And I say, look, actually, this system is really good. And it's one of the most impressive parts of the health service. It's quick, it's efficient. And the most important thing is that you're into the public hospital system where they have the multidisciplinary team. Whereas sometimes when you're seen in private, it's just one of the one specialist and maybe some of the people that they deal with. So I'm a huge fan of the Rapid Access service, and they provide an excellent service to us and to our patients.
Great. And Paul, just from the Marie Keating perspective, you know, one of our missions is to make cancer less frightening by enlightening, and also to reinforce the concept that early diagnosis saves lives. Okay. We know that, you know, as you said yourself earlier on, some men in particular might actually push the can down the road here a little bit. But are we seeing a difference in, you know, how what stages maybe people might be presenting at? Lung cancer, we know very well, because of its low survival rates, people are presenting much later, and therefore, you know, treatments are not as optimal as you'd like them to be, and survival is poor. Are we getting to a point where men and women are coming forward much earlier? You know, and we hear that good news story that this person can be cured or potentially cured because they have a fairly low stage lung cancer.
Well, when it happens, absolutely. And, you know, it's something we say all the time, that the earlier these things are picked up, by far the better outcome. Do people come in and present earlier? Not really. It would be good if they did. But often the most common thing is that things are found when you're doing something else. So I had a chap recently who came into me with chest pain and didn't look well. We did a tracing of his heart, looked like he was having a heart attack. So we sent him off to hospital, and sure enough, he had a heart attack. And as part of his tests when he was in hospital, they did an x-ray of his chest, and they found this thing up in the top of his lung that was causing no symptoms whatsoever. It turned out to be a lung cancer. He had a very small operation and didn't need any further treatment after that. And so him having a heart attack probably saved his life from his lung cancer. And that was just, if you like, lucky that that was spotted. So, but that's, you know, it's by far proof that if he hadn't have had his heart attack, that would have, that lung cancer would have caused him a problem, you know, in 5 or 10 years' time. And by then the treatment would have been much, much more difficult. So we're always on about, and we do try, and particularly people who we know are long-term heavy smokers, which puts them at a much higher risk for lung cancer. We're trying to monitor these people as much as possible, and they would be people who we would do chest x-rays much earlier in than perhaps someone else, just to see if we can try and catch these little things earlier, because absolutely it's lung cancer is one of those cancers that can grow without causing symptoms, like many other cancers in the body. And that's a real problem. So we definitely want to find things early, because it makes a massive difference in terms of people's outcomes.
Yeah, for sure. And Paul, I know you're passionate about preventative medicine. We've talked about, you know, people who may be smokers probably presenting more so with lung, or the possibility of lung cancers. So, and it's actually a habit, isn't it? It's one of those lifelong habits that's really difficult. It's something that people find really difficult, I suppose, to kick that habit. So in your own practice, like, how do you manage that?
Yeah, look, it's a problem, and we have to be upfront about it. We have to be sympathetic to people. It's a very difficult addiction. It will make the biggest difference to your health than anything else you do. I have a lot of people who are worried about, you know, having a slightly raised cholesterol or blood pressure that goes up and down a little bit, but they're happily smoking away a pack a day. And I say, this, all that other stuff is nonsense. The only thing that will make a massive difference to your health, not just obviously from lung cancer, but from lots of other conditions as well, is to stop smoking. So we spend a lot of our time trying to gently, and sometimes not so gently, convince people to try and give up smoking, which is difficult. And we have no, there's no doubt about that. And I always say to people that, you know, you just can't stop trying to quit. And it doesn't matter whether it's worked in the past or not. You just have to keep trying and keep trying and try lots of different things. And we would often put people on medication that might be patches or gums or various other forms of nicotine replacement. And then there are a couple of different tablets that are used for a period of kind of 12 weeks or so, which have also been shown to be very good at helping people to quit. I guess the only proviso that I say to people all the time is there are ways of helping you to quit smoking if you want to quit smoking. I have a lot of people who come into me who say, you know, I've been sent in by the wife and I'm told I have to stop smoking. And I say, well, do you like smoking? Oh, yeah, I really like it. It's the only thing in my life that gives me any joy. So I can't make someone stop smoking. But if somebody is really keen and they know they're hooked and they know it's doing them harm and they desperately want, for the sake of their grandchildren, not to be that smelly old person in the corner of the room, then there's lots of ways that your GP can help. But you have to, first of all, make that decision that, okay, maybe I've smoked enough for one lifetime.
Yeah, true. And we talked about this a lot, actually, in our first episode with Bernie Carter about quit.ie and, yes. and you know, the plan to quit.
Yes.
And we also know that if you can maybe stay off cigarettes for 28 days, you have a better chance of quitting into the future and living a better life.
We refer lots of people to quit.ie. And it's just about, and a lot of people get disheartened if they quit and they quit for, you know, 2 months or 3 months or 6 months, and then something happens and they go back on them and they just lose all confidence. And I just say, it doesn't matter. It's just, it's like riding a horse. You just got to get back on it and try again and try again. And the only people who aren't able to quit are those people who stop trying. Because the more times you try, the greater your chance of success.
Yeah. And there's another interesting aspect around that for, you know, those who are diagnosed with lung cancer who don't smoke. And
yes.
there's a lot of stigma attached, isn't there, to this kind of typical scenario as well, where I know smokers often feel their own self-guilt and blame because they smoke. But then the person who turns up and who's diagnosed with lung cancer and doesn't smoke, I think it's really, really difficult for them, isn't it?
It is. And that's because smoking and lung cancer are so closely linked together. But you're absolutely right. There is a small percentage of people who get lung cancer who've never smoked in their life. And that's just one of those kind of random, unfortunate cancers. In terms of stigma, we don't, you know, we certainly wouldn't be putting any stigma on anybody. And a lot of people do feel that maybe they've caused it themselves, but that's not really relevant. Like, if there's a problem, it needs to be treated. And the biggest hurdle we would have is trying to get people to, you know, to come to us and to maybe realize that there potentially could be a problem. So the difficulty is getting people who've got any of these kind of niggling symptoms but are trying to downplay them. They're the kind of people we really want to see sooner rather than later, so we can rule it out as an issue. I mean, the problem with smoking is it causes lots and lots of other unpleasant things besides lung cancer. But so there are lots of other reasons to quit smoking, and that's really a huge focus of a lot of what we do. And, you know, thankfully, the number of smokers is getting fewer and fewer, and but it's still something that we bang on about all the time because it makes such a massive difference to your future health if you can stop smoking.
Paul, in your practice, you know, we would certainly need to know, or a patient, I guess, might need to know the causes and the risk factors and what they should be looking out for. Can you talk to us about those?
Yeah. So the issues around lung cancer is it's more common as we get older. Like lots of cancers. So most lung cancers are found in people who are 65 and over. But I guess the biggest issue that we would focus on is smoking, which is responsible for more than 90% of lung cancers. The other issue that's become more prominent in recent years is the concept of passive smoking. And there is definitely evidence to show that breathing in other people's cigarette smoke increases your risk of lung cancer, but it's obviously much, much less than if you're the smoker. And certainly in people who have chronic lung conditions like bronchitis, emphysema, as we would call COPD, they have an increased risk of lung cancer. And then people who've had exposure to various chemicals or things like asbestos in the past can cause various types of tumors in the chest and in the lungs.
And people may be aware of those causes and risk factors. What should they be looking out for within themselves or a family member, a loved one?
Yeah, so this is important. So the most common symptom that we would see that would be suspicious would be a cough that's ongoing. Now, there are lots of other causes of an ongoing cough, but one of the ones that we would want to pick up on if we could would be if there's anything going on in the lungs. So it's either an ongoing cough or a change in a cough that you've had for a long time. And then also if you're coughing up, if when you cough that there's any blood in the sputum, that is a concern. If you get short of breath for any reason, if you get aches and pains when you breathe or cough, and then if you've had weight loss without trying to do it, and if you've got tiredness, fatigue, and even loss of appetite and pain in the bones without any other obvious cause for them. That, all of those things would be the sorts of things that you should go and see your GP about.
One of the questions I was going to ask you, Paul, was the final take-home message here for anyone listening today. I suppose lung cancer can be very worrying because of the things we've said. You know, if you don't find it early, if you don't detect it early, survival rates are poor. So what's your message to the listeners around this?
Well, I'd have two messages really, and the things I've said already. So number one would be, if you think that there's anything that's different about your breathing, about your cough, about your chest, about your lungs, about anything that just doesn't feel right and you're ignoring it because you're hoping it'll go away, please don't do that. Please go and see your GP and get it checked out. And you will feel better for having done that. And most of the time, there'll be nothing wrong. But it's really important that people don't ignore symptoms like that, because in the very small number of cases where there is something, it's much, much better to find it early. So that's point number one. Please, please just go and see your GP and say, look, I've got this old cough here. I can't seem to shake it. Is there anything else I need to be doing? And step two, again, is just, we just need you to stop smoking if you smoke. There is no way around it. There's no acceptable level of smoking. There's no reason for smoking. We can't explain it any other way. It's not like other kind of things where you have to do it anyway. You don't have to smoke, but it is a horrendous addiction to try and kick. And, you know, we see people who've been smoking for 70 years, and that's a terribly hard habit to kick, but it can be done. And I always warn people against, you know, people come to me and say, oh, well, you know, my great aunt Edna smoked until she was 99 and nothing bad ever happened to her. But that doesn't mean it's going to be the same for you. So really, it's just something we bang on about till a lot of our patients get bored. But I can't emphasize enough how important it is to ditch the smokes. There are so many ways that it can be done, and the health benefits that you will get in the short, medium and long term are enormous.
Brilliant. And I think that's a really good message to finish off on, isn't it? So the National Smokers Quit Line, for free on 1-800-201-203 is the number you need to go to. Or you can free text QUIT to 501002. So there are other ways of, you know, trying to, I suppose, reinforce that message to people if they're not coming to you directly. Paul, thank you so much for being with us today. It's been a great pleasure to have you. And, you know, it's really good that you're here today to reinforce that message that early detection does save lives. And, you know, together with us, we're trying to make cancer less frightening by enlightening. It may not be a cancer, as you said, it can be other things. So do contact your GP, you know, with any kind of signs and symptoms that you might have. We talked about the changing cough. We talked about identifying a cough that you already have that's different. We talked about maybe coughing up some blood, and we talked about weight loss for unexplained reasons. So please do contact your GP. They're there to help you, and they will help you. And we've already heard about a rapid access service that's in place, so you will not be waiting too long for any kind of referral, you know, into the specialist systems within the HSE. Thank you, Paul. And let's hope that in the future we will see survival rates increasing for lung cancer.
Absolutely. Thanks very much, Helen.
That's all for this episode. Thank you again to our brilliant guest speaker, Dr. Paul Carroll, for his insights, and to our sponsors, AstraZeneca and Pfizer, for making this series possible. And to you for tuning in. Join us next time, where we will once again be talking all things lung cancer. And in the meantime, you can visit mariekeating.ie for more information about lung cancer. Until then, go well.